Thank you, Rich. I'm Adam. I'm an alcoholic. I hope you guys are having a nice night. It's a big book study, so if you don't know, that means we're probably going to talk about the 12 steps. And if you're in AA and you want to recover from alcoholism, you need to learn the 12 steps, adopt the 12 steps as a way of life, and hopefully have an experience to the point that you would try to teach or pass that message along to others. That's like the circle of life here in AA. But I've heard it said, and it's my experience, that the 12 steps shouldn't be called the 12 steps. It should be called a whole bunch of stuff you probably don't want to do. And I say that because a little over 6 years sober, and even at this point, there are nights like tonight, and this is no offense to anybody here, to AA, and Mark's a great guy, just the last place I want to be right now. That's the truth. Like, I'm wired internally to half-step, to make excuses, to be lazy, right? Like, that's the guy that I am. I'm getting a cold. I had a rough week, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be here. But I know, right? There are things I must do. And it's like, there are spiritual principles in AA, right? And one of them is commitment. Like, if I make a commitment to something, that means, barring something really drastic, I need to show up. And AA is a playground for life. So I practice that here, and then, like, I get to a point where if you ask my son, he would tell you, when I tell him I'm going to do something, I do it. I learned that in AA through the 12 steps, believe it or not. So it's pretty cool stuff, you know. The other thing is, the last couple weeks I was showing you guys how, from, you know, the doctor's opinion to page 44, which is We Agnostics, start of that chapter, chapter 4, is the definition of the description of alcoholism in AA. That's step 1, right? And if you don't believe me, let's all go to page 44, right? Because page 44 will tell you the exact same thing I've been telling you guys. The first paragraph of page 44 says, in the preceding chapters, which means everything before page 44, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If this be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So it's kind of funny because they just put it all in one paragraph, a whole bunch of stuff that you got to read for 50 pages or whatever it is. But that's the reality of it. And I'm going to point it out again because I try very hard in Alcoholics Anonymous that what I share with people is sound with the 12 steps and AA-approved literature, mainly the big book, because that's where the program is outlined. So that way, if I say something like, alcoholics don't choose to drink or choose not to drink, right? And Mark's like, Adam, I don't agree with you. He's not disagreeing with me. He's disagreeing with what our program says, right? It's not my opinion. So what I share with you guys, or the spirit of what I share with you guys, and really, hopefully, everybody in AA should be sound with what's in our literature. Because we're like really, like, AA is not a hotbed for mental health. You know, we all know that. We're all a little screwy. We're all really opinionated. You know what I mean? Like, some are sicker than others. And it's important that we have a foundation for what we share and the experience we have. Really important stuff. What I wanted to do was go to more about alcoholism, because the last couple weeks really what I focused on is the physical allergy and how alcoholics can't safely put alcohol in their body. Meaning, if more at least once in your life you've told yourself, like, hey, I'm going to have a beer and take it easy, and, you know, it's lunch break, I'll go back to work at 1, and then you wake up 7 hours later or a week later somewhere else, you've now learned that you can't safely control alcohol once you put it in your body. Something in the body of the alcoholic says, I know you want to have one, but we want to just keep going, and we overshoot the mark. So it's called an allergy, and we talked about it last week, and the way I see it is, if it was just an allergy, like a peanut allergy, it'd be no different. You could just look at the label and be really diligent about what you put in your body, and you would never experience the allergy to peanuts. The issue is, if you had a brain that said, hey, the last time I ate peanuts, it wasn't that bad, I didn't almost die, I want to have a peanut butter cookie this morning, you'd be dead. Because that's how alcoholism works. At some point, I recognize, physically, I do not control alcohol when it goes in my body. I start drinking and all bets are off, and it's a problem in my life. And then I say, you know what? I just got to stop. Just say no. I'm from the 80s. You guys remember Dare? Right? Just say no. How'd that work out? Right? And then I have a brain that brings me back to it. You know, I have this mental obsession to drink. And what my sponsor told me early on was the mental obsession to drink is stronger than your strongest human thoughts. And how he sold me on it was he said, what do you love the most in the world? And I said, my son. I would die for my son in a heartbeat, right? And he said, have you ever put your son in front of a drink? And how did that work? And I said, it never worked. And he said, it's because your obsession to drink is stronger than your strongest human thoughts. Until you recover through God and the 12 steps, none of that's going to work. And it started to make sense to me because I knew deeply what it was. Like, I'll tell you guys about this now. I was going to tell you about it later, but whatever. When I was in rehab, and I remember I went away to an inpatient rehab. I had been coming in and out of AA. I went to an IOP, and I'd come into AA for a couple years for like 30 to 90 day stints. That was my thing, and I'd go in and out. And finally, I had enough, and things had really hit the fan. And I went away to a rehab, and it was supposed to be 28 days. I was there a couple days, and everything hit me. It was the first time I had been like kind of physically sober for any stretch of time. And I was so scared about how bad my problem had gotten that I'm like, I need to go away. And they were like dying to get somebody to pay for some three-month stay at their facility in like the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania. And after like 2 weeks of being at the rehab, I shipped off to a 90-day program. And I was there a little over a month, and at that point, my drinking had gotten so bad that I had lost a job. And my son, he was 3 years old, and I was around him a lot on a daily basis, physically. I wasn't really present in any way, but he certainly knew I was his dad, right? And you guys, like, if you have kids, if you've ever been around kids, you know when they're like 3 years old, unless you're like a total jerk, if you're their parents, they still look at you with light in their eyes, and they love you. And when you come home or they see you, they're excited to see you. They give you a hug, and it's the greatest thing in the world. And I was sitting in rehab, and it was a little over a month, and all I could think about was how bad I wanted to see my son. Now, what I didn't know then and I know now is, like, when they talk about it, and this used to confuse me. So if you're new, people always say alcoholics are selfish. And I would repeat that when I was in AA. I had no idea what that meant. But it sounded good because everybody said it. So this is alcoholic selfishness. When I wanted to see my son and get a hug and a kiss and a smile, it wasn't because I wanted to comfort him. It was because I wanted him to comfort me. I wasn't thinking, my son must really miss his dad. I've been gone for 6 weeks, and he's used to seeing me every single day, and he loves his dad. He doesn't know his dad's a drunk and a jerk. That's what I wanted, for him to comfort me. I wanted a three-year-old to comfort me. And the weekend I could have a visit, it was his birthday. He was three, he was turning four. And my wife at the time was selling our house while I was in rehab, and I had a whole lot to do with my alcoholism. And she said, I'll drive Adam up. And I'm also self-centered alcoholic. I'm Adam and I named my son Adam. So you know what I mean, right? And all I could think about was seeing this little dude, man. You know, it was like a 7-8 hour trip for her. Like, if you're new or you're on the fence still in recovery, like, you blame the people around you for your alcoholism, or they didn't treat you right, or they didn't do enough. My experience is that's never really the story. Because that woman had every reason in the world to not bring my son up there, and she did it in the middle of everything she was going through, you know? And that's all I'm thinking about, man. Let me see this little dude, right? And she finally got there. I was waiting all day. And she, you know, they pull up. This was like this big sprawling estate, man. It was a great rehab. I didn't want to leave. And she had the minivan pulls up to like the carport area. And I come outside. And you know those minivans where you pull the handle and the door is like automatic, right? It goes like this. So he always used to sit in the back in the chair. And this dude, my son's a handsome little guy now. He's 11, but he was the cutest baby. He should have been on some Gerber stuff or something, right? And I pulled the handle. And if that door felt like it took 4 hours to open, how bad I wanted to see this guy. And I wanted to see his face. And I wanted to get that smile and that hit of the spirit and make me feel better. And the door finally opened. And I'm like, hey, champ. And I remember he looked at me. And there was nothing that I had remembered about the look he would give to me all the time. He looked at me like he didn't know who I was. He looked at me, he was afraid, he was confused, he was wondering, where the hell have you been and where the hell am I right now? His head was snatching around. It was like he didn't recognize me as his father. And you know, like when you're 10 years old and you're thinking about having a life one day and the kids and a family, I don't think anybody ever plans for that. Like one day I'm going to have a kid and at a certain point he's going to look at me like he doesn't even know I'm his dad. No, nobody plans for that, hopefully. I never thought that for me. And that look and that moment cut me so deeply on the inside. And he came around after a minute or two and... like, we had a really cool weekend, right? It was his birthday. The guys at the rehab where I was, they, like, made him a cake, and some of them bought him presents, we got to go out, and I got to hang out with him. And I remember when he was leaving that Sunday, I had this really strong thought. And my really strong thought was, my son's never going to look at me like that again. Ever. He's 4 years old. I'm going to stay sober coming out of here, right? Like, I've been going to AA. I got a temporary sponsor here at the rehab because they make you do that so you can get your phone privileges or whatever. And we're going to meetings and we're doing, like, we're getting taught the big book in the 12 steps in the rehab by non-alcoholics, but whatever, right? And that's all well and good. And we're doing our group therapy and we're doing everything else, right? Anybody here ever go to rehab? They ever make you paint? And like color with crayons, like you're 5 years old. They're making us do all this stuff. And I'm like, I'll do all of this stuff. But what I know is, my strongest thought is that little guy will never look at his dad like that again. And that's going to keep me sober. And I stayed another 2 months or whatever it was. Got out of rehab. 6 days later, I was drunk. Didn't even make it a week. Right? My obsession to drink, untreated without God in the 12 steps, right? My self-knowledge and my self-will and all the most important things in my life. If you're truly alcoholic, right? That's my experience. It will never keep you sober. And it's the worst feeling in the world, too, because then you're like, I'm like, what's wrong with me? I don't love my kid. I'm a horrible guy. Who does this? You know? And I had to find out, right? Like, we're sick people trying to get well, right? We're not bad people who need to be good, you know? So, page 30, right? Here we go. Let's read a little bit. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. It's a two-part illness, alcoholism. Physically, I don't have control when I drink. Mentally, I lose the power of choice when I am not drinking and I don't want to drink, and my brain says, let me drink again. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, we will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This was the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. That's real, if you can get with that. I remember, man, coming out of rehab. This was probably a month before I got sober this time around. I'm like trying to get back with my wife. I'm drinking again. She knows it, but at this point, she just gave up, right? Like, you've been going in and out of AA. You went to rehab. And we, like, she sold the house, she was in another place, and then she was looking at getting a bigger apartment, and I was like, we'll do this together, and I had a little money saved up, I had gotten a job, and she was like, you're going to do the right thing, right? And I'm like, yeah. And literally 10 minutes later, she catches me in the basement behind the washing machine drinking the Bacardi, right? And she's like, you just told me you were going to do the right thing. And I said something to her, and I really meant it. And I said, look, I got this figured out. Instead of me hiding this, right, let's just drink like we used to, when it was fun, when we would go out. I can do that. I meant that, right? Because it says here, right, the delusion we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. So denial is one thing. Denial is like I recognize a sliver of reality and I actively like go against it. Delusion is like you might as well be hanging out with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Like you are 100% full flight from reality. You live in your own reality that only makes sense to you. That made sense to me. Years, hundreds of AA meetings, failing time and time again trying to get sober, rehab stays. I can drink like we used to. I really meant that. Everyone around me knew I couldn't. But I lived in the delusion that I could. Until that smashed, whatever we do here is probably not going to work for you. And that's why it says that's step one in recovery. Right? We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control, which means if you're really alcoholic, you can never safely put alcohol in your body. Period. End of story. Right? All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs, they never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there have been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. So I'm here to share my experience. Took medication for a year that a doctor said, this will help with your alcohol cravings, and I drank every single day on that medication. That's my experience. You could try it out. It might work for you. Here we go. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they're in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever, with and without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. We could increase the list ad infinitum. We do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide if you are honest with yourself about it. It may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of your condition. I've heard people say in AA, people are a little like hard edged with this thing, right? My sponsor is one of them, who might say, like, why don't you just go get drunk then, right? Like, you're not ready, go get drunk. Or you're not convinced, just get drunk. So the big book says, doesn't say go get drunk, it says try some controlled drinking. And that's actually very important words, because what they're laying out to you is, if you think you can control your drinking, give it a shot. Normal people can have one drink every single time that they say, I'm going to have one drink. Alcoholics cannot. So maybe you'll find out if you belong here or not through that test, if you're not convinced already. Sounds rough, but I don't know. It might work. We're like the spirit of this, and further on in the big book is, we're not here to convince people that they're alcoholic. We're here to share our experience. And if our experience and what's in our literature sounds like the problem that you have, then we're here for you. Though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking, but the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period of time because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but saw that he would get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control, whatever. So here's what he did, right? He practiced self-control and self-will. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers in the bottle. In 2 months he was in the hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether, and he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces and quickly was dead within 4 years. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remain sober for a long stretch, we could therefore drink normally. But here is a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commence to drink after a period of sobriety. We're in short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, no lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. I 100% came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had done something really out of hand, and I knew I had a drinking problem, and I had admitted to a therapist, like, I'm an alcoholic, and he said, go to AA. But there was a lurking thought in my mind that I could, like, all right, I'm going to come to these AA meetings, but I'll write this shit somehow, some way down the line and be normal. Like, I didn't really say that to people. And really what it was like I had taken, I think I told you guys the first week, but I took a snow shovel to my wife's minivan and broke out the back windshield, and I was drunk, and it was a long story, but that sort of what started me on this AA journey, because I couldn't, like, honey baby this situation anymore. I couldn't, like, nah, I won't do that again. Like, it was so drastic. And I remember coming to AA for like 2 or 3 weeks, and it was the longest I had been sober, the first time I came here in a really long time. And I was surprised how easy it was, because I was drinking a lot of alcohol, and I felt there would, and I had some sweats and everything else, but I don't know, right? And New Year's Eve rolled around. It was around Christmas. And I remember I said to my wife, I was like, so listen, I haven't drank in like 2 or 3 weeks. I'm going to AA. We're going to be at your sister's house. It's New Year's Eve. I think I'm going to drink. And she looked at me like, you've been going to AA meetings. Like, what? Like, everything you just did a couple weeks ago. Like, we've been talking about this. And I'm like, yeah, you know, after New Year's, I'll stop. And she said to me what most good women say to stupid men. She said, well, if you think that's a good idea, then you can. That's what you should do, right? Which means you're an idiot, right? And which means she thinks that's the last thing in the world you should do, right? So what happened was I actually hung out with her and her family. We played board games. Remember, we had a pretty good time, and I got drunk, but I didn't get, like, super stupid drunk. But we go to bed kind of late, whatever it is, 2, 3 in the morning. And I remember waking up an hour or two later, and I just found myself in my sister-in-law's bar at like 4 or 5 in the morning pouring myself a drink. And like, I didn't wake up. I woke up to go to the bathroom. Like, our program tells us, like, once we put this alcohol in our body, all bets are off. And I drank for like 5 days straight after that. I actually went to my car and got some empty water bottles and just raided my brother-in-law's liquor cabinet. I'm sure he was pissed because he thought he had vodka for a while. He was drinking water, you know. But I convinced myself after a period of time, maybe it's not that big of a deal, right? I had to go through this. Like, the beginning of the chapter says countless vain attempts. Like, they're describing the alcoholic from their experience a long time ago. And if you've had this experience, it'll make sense. You know? Hold on. Down here. I'm going to skip base 33 at the bottom. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take quantities some of us have. That's an important statement, because I think a lot of people think you have to be a continuous daily drunk to be alcoholic, and the big book doesn't tell us that. AA doesn't tell us that. It's, do you have control and choice over alcohol? And then all the fun stuff that follows after that. Because some people, they're binge drinkers, right? Some people have one bad day and they've had enough. I don't know what it is, but you don't have to be I became a daily drunk, but it doesn't have to be. That's my experience. Hold on one second. So go to page 34, right? The second full paragraph. It starts with, for those. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. So that's a great point to put there, because not everybody in here right now, maybe you don't want to stop. I know I didn't every time I came into an AA meeting. Certainly everybody who picks up the big book doesn't necessarily want to stop drinking, right? Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis, right? So that means God and the 12 steps and the practices, depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. So I have sponsored and attempted to sponsor dozens of people since I've been sober, December 5th, 2016. And there's been more than one person I've sat down with, and I've discussed alcoholism through my own experience and the nature of alcoholism as it's described in the big book. And there are people who, while they recognize drinking isn't good for them and they've had some consequences, they think they can stop of their own self-will. And if someone feels that way, then I tell them, try it out. Right? Try it out. Because it says, right, whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. You have to find that out yourself, and you have to feel it. Right? It's not about, like, I'm just spitting words to you guys, and we're reading black ink on white paper, and but this thing is an intellectual understanding. It's a spiritual program, and it's a core feeling that you'll get when you get there. And if somebody thinks that, I can't convince them otherwise. You know? Like, when my sponsor asked me, is there a human power that could keep you from drinking? With no hesitation, I told him, no. I knew that at that point. That was my jumping off point. That's the jumping off point. That's where the bottom is. And we're going to get into that, right? Page 35, personal experiences, right? We learned about the man of 30. Here's Jim. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He was a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He's an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reestablished, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic in a serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family for who he had deep affection. So Jim is loaded with a bunch of knowledge about what alcohol does to him. Knowledge, right? Spoiler alert, page 36. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where there had been a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar if I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. Right? So he actually had been there before. He went to a place with a bar and got a sandwich. Right? He was able to do it a couple times. Right? I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. This is how you know this story is from like the 1930s. Nobody has a glass of milk with a sandwich. You know, like that, right? Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. Thus started one. And like, look, I'm going to point this out because there's another personal story in here. You have the man of 30 and you have Jim. All they're talking about is these guys' experiences with alcohol. It's not talking about what happened when they grew up in the 19-teens and how their parents treated them and how lonely they felt. It's what happens when they drink and what happens when they don't drink, and where does that take them? And literally, like, there's a lot of stuff you hear in AA, like I said before, right? And there are real things in the world, it's just not the AA message. Like, people can get triggered by things. Alcoholics who are still sick and suffering, triggers have nothing to do with it. Until you recover, you will drink. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when, right? So, because then the proof is in the pudding. If you're really alcoholic, you've gotten drunk on the worst day of your life and the absolute best day of your life and every day in between. So alcoholics do one thing for sure. They drink alcohol, right? Thus started one more journey to... Like, this guy's trigger was a sandwich and a glass of milk. Come on, right? Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about, right, in italics for a reason. He had much knowledge about himself as alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if he only mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How could such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. It's another thing that's not in the big book. You hear in AA all the time. Just stay away from the first drink. That's not the problem. The problem is the thought of the first drink. Right? To recover from alcoholism means that the mental obsession to drink has been removed. Right? So, because I know if I drink, all bets are off. I'll never drink if I'm never thinking of drinking. Right? And how do I protect myself from that? Right? Through the practice and the processes and the principles of the 12 steps on a daily basis. Like, you get so busy living and living this path, right, and trying to help others and praying and meditating and being involved in something and being of service and getting with God, that thought doesn't occur, right? Like, that's the beauty of it. So the idea really is, if I'm never thinking about drinking, unless somebody, you know, drops a shot of vodka in my mouth while I'm sleeping, I'll never put alcohol in my body. Right, that's what to recover means from alcoholism, because I'll never be cured of it because I can't drink it. Like, I can tell you, and this is me personally, you guys can do whatever the hell you want. Like, I don't take NyQuil when I'm sick because it's like 10% alcohol. It's not because I'm afraid, it's because I know without a shadow of a doubt I don't want to risk it. That's how firmly I believe myself to be alcoholic. I went to the islands, I don't eat the rum cake. Smells really good. Probably tastes good. I don't bother. You know? That's just me. You can do what you want. But I'm so convinced that I have the allergy to alcohol as described here. It doesn't matter to me. You know? Here we go. Where's the next one? Where's my next guy? Let's go to page 38. I got this marked for some reason. Let's see. Right? Bottom of page 38. Some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. We admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, nor are we likely to, for we understand ourselves so well after what you have told us that such things cannot happen again. We have not lost everything in our life through drinking, and we certainly do not intend to. Thanks for the information, right? That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. but the actual potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. Will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize to smash home upon our alcoholic readers as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let us take another illustration. We'll talk about my man Fred. Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm. His account is good, he has a fine home, is happily married, and the father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it was Fred. It is Fred. To all appearance, he is a stable, well-balanced individual, yet he is alcoholic. Real quick, I always thought all these personal stories, you know, like an alcoholic wrote it because they're lying. Like, these guys are the greatest guys in the world. They just happen to be drunks. But in all seriousness, most of the early members of Alcoholics Anonymous, they were really bad drunks. And a lot of them were established people. They were lawyers and businessmen and doctors. And the last thing they wanted to do was have anybody know that they had a drinking problem. You know, like today, everybody's like sober curious, you know? Like it's on Facebook. Like anybody who, like, I don't know, drank a wine cooler once ends up in an AA meeting, right? It's just nobody really judges it. You know, 80 years ago, this wasn't cool. This wasn't okay to people. People didn't admit problems like this, especially people who had standing in society. So it's kind of how you know it was bad. It was bad. Like, Fred may have really been this guy, right? Yet he is alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so, in spite of his character and standing. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. We told him what we knew about alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but was a long way from admitting he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that his humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, would keep him sober for the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. We heard no more of Fred for a while. One day we were told he was back in the hospital. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told us is most instructive, for here was a chap, absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other affairs, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. Let him tell you about it. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink, but I was confident it could not happen to me after what I had learned. Right? I learned something. I'm good. I have knowledge. I reasoned I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows, that I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men failed. I felt I had every right to be self-confident, that it would be only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. In this frame of mind, I went about my business. For a time, all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if we had been making too hard work of a simple matter, right? Like, anybody else ever tell somebody, like, dude, you're blowing this out of proportion, right? Like, it's not that bad, guys. You know, we're making a little too big of a deal out of it. One day, I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day and not a cloud on the horizon. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. Here's his trigger. He crossed the threshold. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to my mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all, nothing more. I ordered a cocktail on my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me a highball would be fine before going to bed. So I stepped into the bar and had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York and of finding a friendly taxi driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcohol friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would only give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. So check this out, guys. We all hear people use the term rock bottom, right? I'm hopeless. I found my bottom. Sometimes in AA, we do the whole my bottom is bigger than your bottom story, right? Like, I have 16 DUIs. No, I have 27 DUIs, you know. I used to drink 16 beers a night. No, I drank 172 beers, right? It's all nonsense. You know, the bottom, it's not just my experience. It's what we just read, and it's what's in here, right? It's not my opinion. What the big book tells us is the bottom is the destruction of self-will and self-knowledge, of self-propulsion, that when we put these things in front of the drink problem, alcohol wins every single time. And then you get to a place where you say, I knew then it was a crushing blow. I'm defeated, right? White flag. So that's the bottom that's described in the big book. The bottom is not a physical place. Sometimes people find it in jail. Sometimes people find it in a mansion, right? I've had enough. I can't do this alone. I'm beat. Everything I've tried has failed utterly. And what's come to me when I think about it over the years, and I hope you guys can relate to this, or if you're trying to figure out how bad your problem is, or if you're convinced that you need to do a bunch of stuff you don't want to do in the 12 steps, as I look at it like this, self-will, self-propulsion, self-knowledge, it's all self. There's no God. There's no higher power involved. So it's everything that makes you, you. Right? Good and bad. So no matter how bad it's gotten for you right now or at some point in your life, every single person in here has achieved something. That's a guarantee. Whether you got a promotion at work, you got a gold medal in the track meet in seventh grade, you bought a house, you graduated high school, college, I don't know, you finished the puzzle, you learned origami, I don't know, right? You have put your mind and your will and your determination towards something in your life, maybe many things, and succeeded, right? Everybody in here has done it, whether you believe it or not. It's a guarantee, right? Like, I have a college degree. I cheated a lot, but I got one, right? I could show you pictures. In my life, like, I graduated college, I weighed like 270 pounds. In my life, I've gained and lost like 3 people, right? So I could put my mind to it and determine and put the work in and lose weight. I know I can do that. That same determination, when I put it to the drink problem, it doesn't work. That's why God and the 12 steps are important. That's why, like, they go into the spiritual aspect of this next, but when it boils down to it, because it confused me for years, I'd come into AA, and like I said before, I would just repeat words and things I heard, like, alcoholics are selfish. And I'd be like, yeah, I need God's will. I had no idea what that meant. I just didn't want to be rude, so I just repeated what you guys said. And I wanted it too, I just didn't understand it. I wasn't beaten up enough, you know. But what I know for damn sure, right, God's will is not my will. And that's the easiest way I could describe it, right? What I want and what I'm able to do is not the solution to alcoholism. And you find it along the way. I like to read this again. Somebody told me once, this woman in AA, she was a writer, and I was telling her, like, you know, like I told you, I cheated my way through school, good enough to be like a B minus to B plus student, right? And I never really read too many books. Like, I would read like the first 5 pages, the last 5, and skim through the middle, and right, and get the Cliff Notes. You guys remember Cliff Notes? That's before Google, right? And I was telling her, like, this is one of the few books I've read, you know, cover to cover. And I'm like, man, this is such a great book. And she was like, so, like, I know what you mean, but I'm a writer. Like, she's like a writer and like an editor. She was like, it's really the most redundant book that's ever been written in the world, right? And after she said that, I realized that, because, like, we just read a whole chapter that said it time and time again. And then the last paragraph, page 43, it says, once more, like in case you didn't get it in the last 12 pages, right? Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power, right? And I've come to believe that, like, Bill Wilson was, like, a flawed man, right? Like, the truth is, like, real works of art, like, the people who do them, a lot of times they could never do them again, or they're presenting something that's greater than who they are, right? Like, he wrote something that just really told our story, and it's helped millions of people. And, I forgot my train of thought. That's really weird. I was doing a good job until then. I had a rough week. I'm going to tell you guys something. Here's how recovery works in my life. Here's why I'm grateful for the stuff I covered with you in the last 3 weeks. If I never hit bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I never got to a place where I said, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm alcoholic, I would have never asked for help. Like, early on in the chapter, it says, maybe science will cure this thing one day. I'm grateful that there's no scientific cure to this thing, or else I wouldn't be who I am today, and I wouldn't do the things that I have to do that make me a better person for myself and those around me. You know? And I have a weird relationship with my ex-wife, but my stepkids are still like my kids, and we're kind of close, and it's weird. I date my ex-wife. Sometimes I don't. Look, I'm sober. I'm not a relationship expert, all right? Put it out there. You know what I mean? And, you know, their dad is dying. My stepkid's dad is dying, and he's 44 years old, right? He has pancreatic cancer, and it's horrible. And, you know, I lost my dad when I was 23 years old to cancer. And it kept me sick for up until I went through the 12 steps. That's the truth. I live with that thing on my back, right? As a result of being alcoholic and asking for help, a couple cool things happened, right, with my life today. I can relate to my stepkids about what they're going through because I no longer deny, and I found some peace in my own dad dying from cancer, right? I can also be around their dad and be supportive to them and him in whatever way and be friendly. And I hated this guy's guts. When I was married to my ex-wife, the two of us, we used to almost fight at times and curse each other out. And I badmouthed him to my stepkid. I did all the wrong stuff. And I got sober and went through the 12 steps and I went through an inventory. And I realized, wow, I hate this guy, and I'm a whole lot like him. Wow. And it's hard to hate people that are a whole lot like you if you're being honest with yourself. And I even sort of made an amends to the guy, right? And like, imagine that feeling that you know somebody in your life's going to die, and you know maybe you need to make something right with them. Because of this experience, being alcoholic and being in AA, I can do that today. I would have never had that ability before. I'd be laying in my bed like I did for many years, staring at the ceiling, wondering, could I ever make anything right, and is this ever going to get any better? So, that's all I got for you guys. Thanks for listening for a couple of weeks.